Hello, this is Joy Raines, co-host of the Mindfulness for Sales Professionals podcast and author of two books, Ignite Your Sales Power, Mindfulness Skills for Sales Professionals, and Meditation Illuminated, Simple Ways to Manage Your Busy Mind. I know a thing or two about training your mind and about being present in conversations with your prospects. And if you want to learn how to transform your sales team from order takers to quota breakers, significantly increase your revenue, and create scalable sales systems, you should be listening to the Authentic Persuasion Show with my good friend, Jason Cutter.
Welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show, a place where business and thought leaders come to weigh in on important sales-related topics that you can use in your sales career and life. I'm your host, Jason Cutter. My mission is to get your help in changing sales from something prospects fear to an act of service they actually seek out and appreciate. Whether you're in sales, leading sales teams, or own a business, I hope this helps you improve your selling effectiveness and you can go out into the world as an authentic persuader. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another guest episode of the Authentic Persuasion Show. My special guest today is Joy Raines. Joy co-hosts a podcast with her husband, Bill, called Mindfulness for Sales Professionals. Together, they have more than 70 years of B2B sales experience. Joy is the author of two books on mindfulness, including Ignite Your Sales Power, Mindfulness Skills for Sales Professionals, and a second one, which we'll cover both. She really loves introducing people to mindfulness skills that enhance their careers and transform their lives. And I know a lot of people that teach mindfulness, a lot of people that talk about it, a lot of people that do guided meditations and teach on the subject. I've never met anyone like Joy who's specifically focused with a lot of her efforts on sales professionals. So obviously it fits really well in with this. Joy, welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show.
Thank you. I am delighted to be here.
So for people, and I mentioned this, they should definitely check it out. You have a wonderful podcast. I absolutely love it. And right before we hit record, I said it was kind of the anti-authentic persuasion show because we just do long form. We have conversations. We're going all over the place. You and your husband do short episodes. So your podcast, just so people know, it's called Mindfulness for Sales Professionals. It's broken up into two segments. The first one is you and your husband talking about some sales strategy, some sales tip, some useful gems. Second part, you leading a guided meditation. Don't walk, don't drive during that. Make sure that you're in a place where it's safe. And then guiding sales professionals through that. Where did this all come from? Where did you and your husband go, we're selling, hey, by the way, let's start a mindfulness podcast and write some mindfulness books and help sales professionals?
Well, that's a great question. I came to mindfulness probably in the mid-80s. So a long time. And I've actually been in sales my whole life. My mother used to say, I never took no for an answer from her. So I started my sales training pretty young. So I began teaching mindfulness in the community because it made such a profound difference in my life. And then along the way, somebody said to me, Joy, why don't you cross mindfulness with sales training? Because I used to do sales training too. So I thought the two together made so much sense because mindfulness is about training your mind. And as a salesperson, that is your tool, your mind. So it's about picking positive thoughts that serve you and then pushing your thoughts out of the way, or I shouldn't say pushing, but just gently moving your thoughts out of the way when you're with a customer so you can focus on what they need. So I wanted to bring this training forward in the form of a podcast. And my husband, Bill, has also been in sales his entire career. And we talk about sales all the time. That's our conversation with each other. So we thought it would be kind of fun to talk about sales in a podcast. And we're having a great time with it. We try to make each episode super focused because salespeople don't often have a lot of time. And if anybody has ideas for episodes they'd like us to cover, we're always happy to hear from people. Our email address is mindfulsalespodcast@gmail.com. So that's a little bit of the background, Jason.
And so for let's say, people out there who don't know what mindfulness means, and it sounds kind of woo-woo,
yeah,
and it sounds like meditation, and yeah, it sounds like, okay, I've got to get in touch with my feelings. I tried meditating once, and I couldn't stop thinking, and I failed miserably, and I hated it, and it was terrible, and I couldn't just stop thinking about shopping or groceries or work or my phone calls. Is there a difference between meditating and mindfulness? And then also explain it or help people understand mindfulness if they've never really heard about it. I know you said it's about getting in touch, but okay, that sounds weird, Joy. Like, what do you really mean? Especially for the salespeople out there who are like, no, I don't do that kind of stuff.
Right. Okay. Important question. So mindfulness is awareness of the present moment. So rather than being caught up in thoughts about the past and thoughts about the future, you're right here in the present moment. So I'll give you an example of how that works in the sales world. Let's say you're going to call a client and you start to spin your mind about thoughts about the past with that client. Well, they didn't buy from me last time. They say they're happy with their current supplier. I don't know if I'm going to get an order. So all of these thoughts can really get in the way of your sales success. You're living in the past. If you come to that client with present moment awareness, which is the same as mindfulness, you have a clear mind. You can meet them where they are rather than where you are in the past. So that's mindfulness, present moment awareness. Meditation is a technique to help you become more mindful. So mindfulness is a state of mind. Meditation is a technique. I teach simple meditation exercises that teach you to train your mind. The mind can be very wild. Actually, it's been compared to a wild horse. There's an old story about somebody trying to ride a wild horse, and somebody says to the rider, "Hey, where are you going?" And he says, "Don't ask me, ask the horse." So meditation is a practice of training your mind so it goes where you want it to go, rather than where the horse wants it to go. When I began meditating in the mid-1980s, it was, Jason, considered very sort of woo-woo and out there. But now businesses are teaching their employees how to meditate. I've been doing these virtual 30-minute Zoom sessions to teach people how to meditate, to reduce stress, actually, because people are pretty stressed right now. So there you have it. Mindfulness is a state of mind. Meditation is a way to train your mind.
I really love that analogy and the visual of the wild horse,
yeah,
which is how it feels, right? And if you've ever seen someone trying to ride or break in a wild horse, it's just chaotic and it's terrible. The horse is in control.
Right.
The horse is bigger. The horse is stronger. You're just like a fly on its back and it's in control and you're just along for whatever ride it wants to give you.
That's right.
And I will tell you, when you really start getting into it, you're mindful of what your mind is doing and how much it's bouncing around and how much it's going, like you said, the fear of the future, the anxiety about the past and the anxiety about the future and the regret of the past and all these things. It does feel like that. And I love that analogy too, when you get it reined in and then you can tame that horse, even if it's just in bursts, you can actually make it to somewhere and the ride is much more pleasant.
Yes. And you have a good point about even if it's just in bursts, because it's the nature of the mind to go all over the place. So if you can just sort of weave these mindful moments into your activities, those are the times you're training your mind.
From all of your research and time spent, because I think this is always important to understand the why, the deeper stuff.
Yeah.
Why is our mind wanting to do that? Why is our mind acting like a wild horse, let's say, all the time?
Yeah, it's the nature of the mind to do that. Just like it's the nature of the heart to beat, it's the nature of the mind. And I think a lot of this was developed as a survival mechanism back in the caveman days or even before that. People were always on the lookout for danger. Is there a lion around? They didn't want to become the lion's lunch. So the mind was constantly scanning for danger. And back then, when there was danger, people would fight or flee, fight or flight, right? But now what happens is a lot of people are constantly in this fight or flight state. The body's tensed up, the mind is going, and the dangers aren't always real. And you know what? Sometimes they are real because we're in the midst of a global pandemic right now. But when you can train your mind, you can differentiate between stories you're spinning out about things that aren't happening and what is real. So this mindfulness helps you respond consciously rather than react unconsciously.
One of the most impactful things I've heard in the past, it was probably 6-9 months, and I can't remember the source. So I apologize to whoever said it. And if you know who it is, please reach out to me so I can find that source again, because I heard them as a guest on a podcast, essentially said that historically in those primitive days, in those survival mode days in our existence as humans, as a species, it was more valuable to imagine seeing 5 lions throughout the day around every corner and the illusion or the image of a lion and freak out and be safe from that than it is to miss the one lion that's real that one time, right? So our brain is constantly looking for everything that could be danger, illusion made up, because that's how we've survived. That's how we've made it to the top. That's why where we are in the chain of species and creatures on the planet. The trade-off, though, is that comes with a cost, right? Yeah. Constantly being looking for danger, regret, trying to stay safe is expensive mentally.
Yeah, you bring up a really good point. And I like the way you phrased it. It's expensive mentally. And it is. And think about that also in a sales situation. If somebody's mind is engaged in being on the lookout for what's wrong or being on the lookout for obstacles, they may create those obstacles, you know, like get in their way of seeing the customer clearly.
Yeah. And that's fascinating because I see that a lot where, let's say, for example, your prospect hangs up on you in the middle of the conversation. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, usually because of bad experiences in their life, something that happened. I know a lot of times, and I see a lot of, I'll say in myself, where a lot of my hesitancy or things over the phone could be related to being younger and wanting to ask somebody out on a date. And maybe it didn't go well over the phone when you're in an age bracket where you only had the phone or passing notes in class. And so like that didn't work. And then now there's this kind of this history and memory brought up. But people, you know, a prospect hangs up on them. And I see so many people are like, oh, they're mad at me. They don't want to deal with me. It's like, maybe their battery died. Maybe they went through a tunnel. Maybe their boss walked in and they had to hang up really quick. Like, a lot of people are just trained to see like all the negative potential outcomes instead of like either nothing or the positive potential real outcomes.
That's such a good point. So what happens is this sort of rejection, I'm going to put that in air quotes, acts as a trigger, and it triggers these old experiences, the parent reprimanding the child, you brought up the date that didn't go well or never happened. The teacher reprimanding a kid. So it brings up all these experiences. And I think that's actually why a lot of people don't even like to be in the sales profession, because they can't handle this, what they perceive as rejection. But I like to reframe it. And it's not rejection. It's not right now. It's I don't have enough information. It's I don't understand how your product or service can help me.
Well, and especially when you start to extract, assuming you're not just a jerk who's selling, extract the fact that they're not rejecting you. Mm-hmm. They're rejecting what you're offering, which means maybe you're not doing a very good job at it, explaining it, finding the value, digging deep. And maybe it's not right now. Although if you're doing a good enough job, there's enough urgency where it should generally be right now, but not taking it personal, right? That's where there's that balance between it's not personal, it's business. But you also want to make it personal because it's two humans and you want to help. But you also got to, like, somebody hangs up on you. They could be having a bad day. You don't know what's going on in their life, and it's not you.
Exactly. That's so right. And again, this is how mindfulness can help. Because let's say somebody's training their mind in meditation. They're taking their mind out of drive and putting it into neutral. And they're training their mind in this neutral awareness where they don't add meaning to what's happening in the present moment. So the client hangs up on you And if you're trained in this neutral awareness, you don't add that meaning onto it. You don't add the, they're not interested in me, they don't like me, I'm not going to do business with them. You just sort of take the situation as it is and say, okay, they hung up and I don't know why.
That is so valid. I think that's a huge thing that might be subtle and might get missed by a lot of people, but it's assigning that meaning, which applies in sales and anything in life, any relationship. I mean, one of the biggest lessons I have, which applies to sales, but I use this one a lot, even in my own head, which is you're driving down the freeway and there's this person just weaving in and out of traffic, driving on the shoulder, just going crazy. And you're assigning meaning to it, meaning they're a jerk. They don't care about anybody. They're so self-centered. And it's people like that who should blank, 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 right? Like you feel like get arrested, get in trouble, cause accidents, whatever you want to do. And then I've had times in my life where I am that person, right? I got a call. There's somebody in the emergency room. I need to get there faster than I normally drive, which is usually fast anyway. And it's like, I've now become that person. And then all of a sudden afterwards, my empathetic side changes when I see that and go, you don't know what kind of call they just got. Like, you just don't know. So you extract that meaning instead of assuming. It's like, I don't know. I just don't know.
That's right. So when you realized you were in this other person's shoes, then you saw, wait a minute, I wasn't seeing the whole thing. And then there's also this side of it, which actually happened to me this morning. I was on the road. I was trying to get over to enter onto a highway. And this little car kept speeding up and wouldn't let me in. So I shouted a few choice words in my car. And finally, I got over and I ended up passing this car on the highway. And it was an elderly woman who looked totally confused and she didn't know what she was doing.
It was not intentional. She wasn't trying to be a jerk and block you.
No. And I assigned this meaning. I mean, even though I practice mindfulness, I still assign meaning to things. But anyway, there it is. So I think we need to assign meaning to situations in order to function in the world. However, we also can benefit by understanding the meaning we're assigning to things and then saying, is this true? I have a magnet at home. It says, don't believe everything you think.
Right. I think that's perfect. Is that meaning true? Is it accurate? Do I have any basis for that meaning? And how attached am I into that meaning? Or is that just temporary until I prove it differently? And is that meaning positive or negative? Right. Which is maybe I'm assigning a meaning to this. And if it changes or I find out some evidence, I'm just going to switch. So talking about the mindfulness versus meditation, meditation being the tool to achieve mindfulness. And just for people listening, because I wouldn't say skeptical, but my kind of like struggle with meditation mind kicks in. And I'm just imagining you want me to sit at my desk or in my cubicle in the lotus pose with my legs crossed, just meditating and being in the moment and getting ready for my phone calls all the time.
Yeah, well, I don't.
Okay. I was like, uh-oh.
I want you to do what you want to do. However, if you want to train your mind in mindfulness, I want you to pick something that resonates with you because that's really important or else you're not going to do. So a friend of mine, the National Speakers Association, said to me, Joy, I have such a busy mind and I want to learn how to meditate and I just hate sitting down and focusing on my breath. That's not for me. So I said, okay, what do you like to do? And he said, I like to walk my dog. I said, all right, well, you can practice being mindful anytime. You don't have to sit down and formally meditate. And by the way, I teach meditation in a chair, not in the lotus position, because that's a lot more accessible. But if people like sitting in the lotus position, that's fine too. I don't really think there's a right or wrong way to do things. But anyway, I suggested to my friend that the walk with his dog could become a mindfulness exercise to listen to his dog's nails as they click on the pavement. In other words, to come into the present moment with his senses. So the sense of hearing, listening to the dog's nails, the sense of sight, watching the dog's tail wagging back and forth. And using your senses to come into the present moment is a really, really great way to start to develop mindfulness. And it can just be as simple as taking a sip of tea and noticing the taste.
One of the biggest things I've taken from meditating and mindfulness, and I love the fact that you brought up the option and the way that you could do a walking meditation with that, is the point and the goal is to just be present and to notice things, and then to notice it enough where you could direct or redirect your focus, mm-hmm. right? If I'm understanding it correctly. So again, it's not stopping your mind from thinking. And I hear this a lot, and this is helpful for people who tried meditation like I did and go, I just can't get my mind to stop. I'm obviously failing because I'm supposed to be a blank slate for 20 minutes. And no, that's not the point. In my experience, the point is when you're meditating or trying to be mindful, is your mind is going to do the wild horse thing. The key is when you recognize it, can you shift that away, focus on something else, right? And then inevitably it will start spinning again. Can you catch it and then redirect it? And then it's going to do it again. It's not about never spinning. It's about catching it and being mindful and being present, which for you, where does that come in for the salesperson, right? So we're talking to the salespeople specifically. We want them to be present. We want them to be mindful. Where's that come in? Where's that an advantage for salespeople?
Where's the advantage of being present, you mean? Or where's the advantage?
Present and mindful. All of this stuff that you're helping salespeople with.
All right. That's an important question. And before I address that, I just want to say you nailed it, Jason. It's not about stopping your thoughts, because the mind churns out thoughts. And if somebody is meditating and their mind starts racing after about 1 second, that's normal. It's the coming back to the present moment that builds your awareness, not the forcefully staying there, but the noticing when your mind wanders and coming back again and again and again. And there's an old story about a new meditation practitioner who said, I've meditated for 20 minutes and I've had 10,000 thoughts. And her teacher says, wonderful, 10,000 opportunities to come back to the present moment. So it's this coming back again and again and again. So let's look at how this works in a sales situation. Let's say you're talking to your customer and then you notice your mind is wandering. My mind often wanders to what I'm going to have for my next meal because probably 80% of my thoughts are about food. So if I notice I'm thinking about lunch, I come back to the present moment. If I notice I'm thinking about, am I going to close this sale? I come back to the present moment. So it's this continual coming back again and again and again when you're with your customer, so you can focus on your customer and be in that sort of neutral awareness. So you're not caught up in preconceived notions of what the customer is going to do or say or what happened last time. You're with your customer in the present moment, and that's when you can really listen to them. You can hear what their needs are, maybe discover some problems, and that's where you can build bridges. Because ultimately, I see the sales professional's job as service to the customer's needs. So that's really what you want to discover. The other place mindfulness can come in is noticing your own thoughts. And I'm a big fan of visualization and affirmations. And these would be things to do when you're not with your customer, to train your mind for when you are with your customer.
On the customer's topic that you were covering is being present, because I see this as an issue a lot, where people's minds are racing in the moment, external things. They're talking to their prospective customer and they're not listening, right? Not actually listening, not actively listening. They're waiting for the person to stop so they can jump in with some comment, or they've just literally lost track and they've tuned them out and they're missing lots of things. Is there anything specific you teach or any tips that you have for that part in particular?
Yes, there is. One of the big things about mindful listening is repeating back to the customer what they say, paraphrasing. I actually learned this skill when I was a crisis intervention counselor on the hotline when I was in college. I was a volunteer on the hotline for the Washington, D.C. area, and they taught us how to paraphrase back what the caller said. And I remember when I was trained this skill, the trainer said, now, when a caller calls and they say something, I want you to repeat back to them what they said. in their words or different words. And I said, wouldn't that be awkward repeating that back to them? I was kind of confused. And the trainer said, oh, you think it would be awkward repeating it back to them? And I said, yes. And then I realized she was modeling exactly what she wanted me to do. So when you repeat back or paraphrase back using your own mm-hmm. words, what your customer says, it keeps you engaged and it keeps the customer engaged and it helps the customer feel understood. It also gives the customer a chance to clarify, well, I didn't actually mean that. I meant this. So really important engagement tool to keep you present. I could get into others as well. I'll just mention real quickly, I like smooth stones for meditation. And sometimes I keep one in my pocket and I just touch the stone to remind me to come back to the present moment.
If there's one thing I know, it's that sales is full of failure. Even if you're a Hall of Fame level sales professional, you can make a great income despite losing more than you're winning. If there's one aspect of sales that most people fear and what keeps a lot of people even wanting to get into sales, it's getting hit with objections. That is why I wrote my latest book, The Sales Consultant Guide to Overcoming Objections, Yours and Theirs. This is the first in my new series of short books, guides filled with what you need for helping you improve your selling effectiveness. No fluff, no long-winded stories, no filler to make it seem more valuable, just actual foundation-building strategies to help you become aware of the true nature of why your prospects bring up objections, the different type of objections, and then specific ways to overcome them that are universal to most any sales process, product, service, or style. Go to Amazon.com today and get your copy of A Sales Consultant's Guide to Overcoming Objections. Or if you'd rather, as a gift to the listeners of this podcast, email me at jason@cutterconsultinggroup.com and I'll send you a complimentary full version of it as my thank you for listening and supporting this show. I think having that anchor is always good. Something where it reminds you. I've done that with various things in my pockets, coins or symbols of something, where it's just like either brings me into the present or puts me into a more positive headspace, feeling it just like the association with that. So I think that's important. And I love that parroting kind of like replaying back to the other person what it is. There's a lot of people out there who train and say, do that every single time. Anytime somebody answers a question, that will get annoying long term. Mm-hmm. So obviously for me, the way I use that is more in-depth portion of that conversation with that prospective customer when they're really sharing something that's really valuable, or I want to make sure they know that I heard it, then I'm going to use that. Obviously not for everything. I think that's key.
Yeah. You want to find a balance. And I think you brought up a very important point. If you do that after everything your customer says, it can actually sound phony. It can be awkward. Another technique I learned, I think it was probably in the hotline still in terms of listening skills, is if the customer says something, just pick up on the last word of what they said with a question mark. In other words, maybe the customer says, well, we're not going to start planning our budget until the third quarter. And then you would just say the third quarter with a question mark, and then they would elaborate on it. So by mixing up different skills, you don't play one too much. It's good to mix them up and certainly have open-ended questions at the ready.
And fundamentally, to be successful at any of that, you actually have to listen. And generally, probably I'm going to guess you're going to advocate for it as well, listening more than you're talking, especially in the sales role.
Yeah, I've heard two ears and one mouth, use them in that proportion.
Yeah, and I think that's the key. Now, the other part that you had mentioned outside of the listening, then you talked about the affirmations and things that the salesperson is doing and or saying to themselves or being mindful outside of the prospect's presence, right? Outside of the customer's conversations. I know one of the biggest things that's difficult, and you touched on it earlier, is the amount of rejection that happens in sales and that feeling that happens. And then if not careful, and even if you're careful, it still happens, is the mental health side. So the mental health, the difficulties, the challenges people have when it's just a constant barrage of rejection. I mean, if you're really good at sales, you're still losing a lot of the time in your conversations. And so what do you do to help people, or what kind of ways do you see that salespeople specifically can help their mental health side, affirmations, all of that piece?
Yeah. And that's such an important piece in sales, because so much of that resistance comes up. And I'm going to say resistance rather than rejection, because that reframes it. So I think, first of all, it's important to reframe it and not think rejection, think resistance. And I like to think of water. If water meets resistance, it's going to look for cracks. It's going to look for pathways. And I like to think of sales sometimes as a strategic exercise. If there's resistance here, can I come at it this way? Can I ask the customer a different question, or can I contact them in a different way to find an opening? So rather than focusing on the roadblocks, I like to focus on the openings while still keeping a positive mind and affirming for success. So rather than thinking, oh, this is the 10th person who rejected me today, thinking, well, I've met some resistance here and I'm open to opportunities where I can find ways to connect with customers. So always looking ahead, always looking to move forward and realizing it's not about the rejection. Sold telephone systems at one point in my career to businesses, and it would take quite a number of phone calls to get a number of appointments, to get a number of systems sold. And somebody once told me, well, each time somebody says no, think, yippee, I'm that much closer to a yes. And certainly if you look at a baseball player who's doing quite well, maybe they're batting 350. So look at all those times they got strikeouts. So just realizing that the resistance is part of the entirety of the sales process, but it's not all. Focus on where you can get movement. Keep your mind positive by using affirmations or any other means to keep a positive mind. And we can certainly talk about more how to use affirmations if you'd like.
Yeah, no, I think that would be great. Like any tangible, tactical, anything like beyond the theoretical, because a lot of salespeople know, okay, if I'm going to get rejected 7, 8 out of 10 times, that means I'm actually doing pretty well, depending on your industry. But like, what specific affirmations have you found that would help most people in sales? Keeping in mind, everybody's different.
Yeah. I think the ones that work best are the ones that resonate with the individual and ones that the individual can believe and take in as if they're true. So I'll just back up a little bit for people who may not know what affirmations are. Affirmations are positive statements that people can repeat to themselves and actually take them in as if they're happening. Like maybe, well, I have my book here with a whole list of them.
There you go.
I'll just open to one. I have a deep respect for my customers and it shows in the way I listen to them, but I think we're talking about prospecting now. So here's one. I am confident in my abilities to generate new business. So let's just take that as an affirmation that somebody could use. The exercise is to repeat it to yourself again and again till you actually think, well, that's true. I am confident in my ability to generate new business. So this could be repeated to yourself silently throughout the day. You could write it on a piece of paper and have it on the wall. You could record it and play it back and listen to it. You could spend about 5 minutes in the morning saying it to yourself. So there's many different affirmations you can use, but the most important thing is to keep it in the present tense as if it's already happening. Not, I will find prospects to do business with, but I easily find prospects to do business with. So keep it in the present. Keep it in the positive. Don't say, people won't hang up on me when I call. But right. People are happy to hear from me when I call. Keep it present, keep it positive, and keep it as something that you believe in. And then on the flip side of affirmations, these statements you say are visualizations where you actually visualize yourself doing some of these activities.
And I think that's the key. I mean, most people have heard stories of athletes who play out the game in their mind. I think Michael Jordan is one of the most vocal and famous examples of that, where he, prior to the game starting, he would play out the whole game in his mind in advance. Now, obviously, it's not a controlling the future fortune teller mode. It's just visualizing it and just getting your brain in that mode, because they've also done lots of studies that show the brain doesn't know the difference. It just knows pictures. And so it doesn't matter where the pictures come from. You can give it whatever pictures you want, and then it will do its best to make that true and make that the reality.
That is so right. And the brain has neuroplasticity and the ability to form new neural pathways. So when you're doing these things, like using positive statements that you're taking in as if they're true, or visualizing success, you're creating these new neural pathways, and then your behavior will line up with them.
So this all sounds great. And I'm thinking of the skeptical people out there listening, because I am or was that person. Speaking in the present, sometimes I'm thinking, okay, but I'm so far away from what you're talking about, Joy, like your advanced level, I'm here. Where do you usually suggest that somebody starts? So you got a salesperson, maybe they're in their desk or working from home. Where should they start to make this easiest on themselves and the best chance of long-term success?
Yeah, and long-term success is very important. So start with manageable steps and start where you are. So do you want to start becoming more mindful? Or do you want to start listening to customers more? Or do you want to start by picking some statements to affirm? Or do you want to start by visualizing something? So I would say pick one technique that seems as if it resonates with you, and pick an amount of time that you can commit to and be successful at. If somebody says, well, I'm going to practice doing affirmations and visualization and meditating 45 minutes every day. And then if that's realistic for them, they're not going to succeed and it's not going to go so well. So I'm a big fan of saying, okay, well, I'll practice visualizing success and affirming for success for 3 minutes every morning, or for 30 seconds or 1 minute every time I pick up the phone or before I send an email. It's great, as I said, to weave these practices into the day. And before you contact a client, just get your mind in the right space. Even if you take a few seconds just to focus on a few breaths moving in and out of your body. So start with where you are, pick things that resonate with you, and don't get too ambitious if you're going to set yourself up for failure. Pick something that you'll do, whether it's, as I said, affirming, visualizing, meditating, practicing mindfulness throughout your day. Those are all different techniques you could use.
And I think that's great advice. And it's similar to what you see people do that doesn't set themselves up for success, like wanting to be healthy, go to the gym, work out. Let's say New Year's resolution, where they say, I'm going to go to the gym 5 days a week or 6 days a week for an hour a day, right? But they're coming from nothing. They haven't been to the gym in years, and they're going like from 0 to 1,000 miles an hour instantly, and setting themselves up for why most of New Year's resolutions fail, because they're trying to go too hard and too fast, and then no grace for themselves for when it doesn't work. So I have found that works really well. I mean, I'm not saying go to the gym for 5 minutes a day, but some people, if that's what it takes, I know coaches who say, go to the gym for 10 minutes. If you have trouble making that a habit, go to the gym for 10 minutes, do a couple workout, leave. That's great. If you can do 10 minutes tomorrow, it's great. Usually what happens is you end up, oh, this is easy, I could just stay for extra time. And then you build that habit. And if you miss a day because you're sick, or for salespeople because it's hectic, I have that. Like my goal is 5 days a week with meditation. Some days it's just chaotic in the morning and I'm not getting to it. And maybe it's later on in the day. It's just is what it is, right? It's life.
It's life. Yeah. And so what you're saying is just don't judge yourself. Don't get down on yourself if you miss a day or whatever. I mean, life gets in the way of life, right?
That's it. And be mindful too of how it goes. And if it doesn't go great, or you can't just focus on anything, like a friend of mine used to tell me, a bad day in the gym is better than no day in the gym. And so even if it doesn't go well, You tried it, you're doing it, you're working on the habit, and that's the key, showing up.
Yes, and you're working on the habit. I mean, that's it right there in a nutshell, because it's a matter of training your mind and developing those new neural pathways and developing that habit. I like to tie meditation into something I do regularly, like get up in the morning, brush my teeth, meditate. That way I know I'll do it. And if I don't have 20 minutes, because that would be my typical meditation time, I'll meditate for 5 minutes. And that's okay. And if I don't have any time that day, that's okay too. But when I'm taking a walk, I'll bring all my attention to the soles of my feet as they connect with the ground. So I think even doing a walking meditation is a great way to fit it into your day. Because generally, if you're mobile anyway, you're walking from one place to another.
I love it. One last thing before we shift, because I think this is important. You touched on it before. It's been kind of a stressful year for most people. It's been kind of a different year for most people, right? That's putting it very lightly. And I don't want to keep beating that horse of the coronavirus in 2020 and all the stuff going on. But specifically for salespeople, especially if you're used to working in an environment around other people, now you're remote, now you have to manage your own time, now you have to be successful, now you're trying to persuade prospective people who are going through their own stuff. What have you found, or what are you helping in a guidance way for sales professional in mindfulness relative to challenging times, which right now is extremely challenging for most people?
Yeah, it's an unprecedented time for sure. And when we were talking about meaning, the meaning people give things, Jason, before, you used an important word or concept in mindfulness, which is the word attached. You said, are you attached to the meaning? And with this pandemic, it's a time to become very unattached to the meaning you gave a lot of things, because it's a time to pivot the way you've been doing business for a lot of people. I'm not going to say for everybody, but a lot of people are finding if they pivot, they can find new ways to do business, and people are becoming very innovative. So it's a time to become unattached to the old meaning and find new ways. There's obviously a lot more virtual things going on right now. I know a lot of people are doing virtual meetings that are much shorter than in-person meetings, and they're great. They fit into people's day well. I mean, I've been doing these virtual training sessions that are 30 minutes, where in the past they'd be much longer. So these are some of the ways you can pivot, is just find new ways to do business. And also to watch your mindset. This is such an unprecedented time, and it's extraordinarily stressful for so many people. So not living amidst that stress all the time, trying to keep your mind positive and look for success and look for areas you can move forward. It's a time to be creative. It really is. So with all the challenges of the pandemic, I think there's a lot of opportunities as well.
I couldn't agree more. That was kind of my view when things were going on, and it seemed like it was going to be like this, remote, isolating for a while. And what can you focus on? What can you come out of this? When things go back to any kind of normal, or what the new normal might be, what will you have that you're taking into that? And I don't necessarily mean like you're writing a book, or you created something new, or you worked all the time and then you have this big pile of money, but more of like, what did you learn? What did you experience? Maybe it's just the resilience. Like, hey, how did you stay positive? How did you stay focused throughout this? Building that muscle, which was a big part of life, where the next time something happens for you, it's your set point is different and you can handle it. I know that's one of the things that's helped me through this, is I've been through enough stuff and been through enough rough environments where I've lived and things I've had to deal with in life. Fairly, I wouldn't say easy, but acceptable. And the meaning is different for me. So I totally can relate.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I totally get it. It makes sense. And it's all about that. What are you looking at, the silver lining or the cloud?
Yeah. And also, always go back to basics in sales. I had somebody tell me, I'm trying to set up virtual meetings with customers and everyone's too busy. And I said, well, are you leading with a benefit statement? Oh, right.
They're not. They're just leading with their hand out saying, oh, in their mind, they're thinking, I need more sales. And so mm-hmm. their message coming across is, hey, we need to get on the phone because I want to talk to you about this. It's like, nobody cares, right? Nobody's going to make time for that when you're leading with the ask instead of leading with the value, the benefit, and the reason why they would even want to take time out of their hectic, stressful life to give to you.
Exactly. So always go back to basics.
Always go back to the basics.
Yeah.
So let's shift a little bit. What does it mean when you hear the word authenticity?
What does it mean when I hear the word authenticity?
Yeah.
Okay. That's a big question. Can I ask a little bit of the context of that? And I might know how to come at it.
Whatever that means to you in sales, in life, in business, authenticity or being authentic.
Okay. Well, to me, it means speaking your truth. So not trying to BS your way through things.
There you go.
Okay. Just really speaking the truth. And in a sales context, I think it's important to really connect with the value that you believe in so that you can authentically communicate that to your client. Because people can tell when you're aligned with your message. So that, again, is where the affirmation and the visualization come in, like really believing in the value of your product or service so you can speak the truth to that from a place that's believable. I think being authentic is connecting with your values, too, and living from your values. And hopefully their values are values that are going to build bridges with customers. And then if they're not, it gives you a chance to reflect upon that and say, well, where do I want to go? In meditation, we often think of every breath is an opportunity to begin again. And I think it's that way in sales, too. Every moment is an opportunity to begin again. So with your client, you can begin again. You can always come back to your true self. Always come back to the client's needs and start over. And I think part of that is the authenticity, really, of just connecting with what's true for you and starting again, no matter where you are. That was a little bit rambly, but that's what I think authenticity right now.
I love it. I think that's great. The whole spectrum that you covered. I mean, I think all that's from the values to that last part. What about when you hear the word persuasion and or where do you see persuasion fitting into success for salespeople?
Well, when I think of persuasion, I think of excitement because once I understand the customer's needs, I think it's my responsibility to be excited and enthusiastic. Maybe that's a better word than excitement. To be enthusiastic about the way my product or service can fulfill those needs. So again, this goes back to one's own belief in their product or service. Can they be enthusiastic about it? Can they convey this excitement? Because that is contagious. I don't know if I should use that word right now with the pandemic, but anyway, contagious can have good connotations too. So somebody's enthusiasm or excitement can help a customer make a decision to buy.
I love it. And just like anything with the words you use and the meaning behind it and the attachment, the more we can put positive meaning and positive attachment to certain words like contagious, obviously that helps as well. Because otherwise it's just going to be a bad word. But it is true. I mean, enthusiasm, excitement, energy, positivity is equally contagious, just like obviously viruses, but also negativity. And it really the key is what are you bringing and what are you hoping to spread in the world? And is that positive or destructive? Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
For you growing up as a kid, what is it that you wanted to be? I'm going to guess not a mindfulness sales coach. Just going to guess. Or selling phone systems. So I just have a guess, but maybe prove me wrong. But what is it you wanted to be?
I honestly have no memory of having aspirations to be anything. I was just having a good time. I like to play. I like to do gymnastics on the front lawn and get grass stains all over my knees or clothes. I was just really focused on having fun. I knew I was going to go to college. I had no aspirations past that growing up. I just wanted to play.
If it helps, I'm exactly the same way. I ask everyone this question because I'm just curious at where someone thought they were going to go and where life took them. Same exact way. If somebody asks me, I have literally no idea of any goals or hopes or dreams that I had as a kid other than either having fun or just surviving the rough parts, being awkward and shy and only child and times where I was bullied. Like, I just wanted to make it. I'm not thinking long-term anything. I'm just like, okay, how do I deal with now? Or just how do I just have fun? Because just a kid. So don't worry. I totally relate to that answer. For you, what is your definition of success or for success?
For me personally, or how do I define success in general for anyone?
Let's say for yourself.
It's definitely being present and watching my mind and bringing my mind back to the present. And it's being authentic to who I am. And well, my hope, Jason, is really to bring more mindful practices into the sales world, because I've been in sales since I graduated college. My dad was in sales. His father was in sales. I love the sales profession, and I have found out about mindfulness and what a difference it can make in your life. So part of my vision of success is bringing more mindful practices into the sales world. I think it can make salespeople more effective. And more importantly, I think it can bring a lot of good to the profession, because it can really help people build bridges to their customers and ultimately serve their customers. And that's what's most important.
I think that's great. Last question, the journey or the destination?
Oh, definitely the journey.
Why do you say that? Or anything to add to that?
Well, because the journey keeps you in the present moment. And I think that's the place to be.
Well, and if you're focused on mindfulness and the goal is to be present and taking in the present moment, then it's about wherever you are and you're always in the journey. And so that makes total sense. I love it. That's the exact answer I would have guessed you would have said if I had thought about it in advance. So for people to find all the stuff that you're doing, so one is the podcast. So again, for people listening or watching, it's the Mindfulness for Sales Professionals podcast. And they're short episodes. They're great. They're like the opposite of this, which is you've got this one here, and then you've got her small bits, her and her husband, Bill, which is amazing. And then the website for that, if you want, it's obviously available everywhere, but you can go to mindfulsalespro.com and find it there. And then your two books that you have, one is Meditation Illuminated, Simple Ways to Manage Your Busy Mind. And then you also have Ignite Your Sales Power. People can find you on LinkedIn. I know that you're very active on LinkedIn. We've chatted many times there. It's kind of where things started. So you can find you there. Again, Joy Rains, R-A-I-N-S. And then finally, before we go, you're doing what you're calling, you just started, called Sales Boost Sessions. And so what is that and how can people find that?
Yeah, that's a short 20-minute session, perfect to kick off sales meetings. We can pick any topic that we cover in the podcast, and I'll spend the first 10 minutes or so discussing the concept so people have an understanding of it, and then the last 10 minutes in a guided meditation or visualization so people can have a firsthand experience practicing. And you can find that on my website, mindfulsalespro.com.
Awesome. Joy, thanks for coming here, for helping the sales profession like you do, helping the listeners here hopefully dive into that mindfulness practice and use meditation and kind of step away from the woo-woo weird side where that's not what salespeople do, but embrace that for the mindfulness. So thank you for bringing that positivity and for being on the show. I appreciate it.
Jason, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
All right, and that's it for this episode of the Authentic Persuasion Show, and I will catch everybody on the next conversation about authentic persuasion. Thanks for tuning into the Authentic Persuasion Show. If you found value in this episode, please do two things. Subscribe so you can get each new episode, and share this episode with anyone else you know in sales. Together, we can help shift the way sales is done. And if you want to find out more information about how to transform your sales career, or you want help with shifting your sales team from order takers to quota breakers, go to jasoncutter.com. Don't forget that everything in life is sales, and I will catch you on the next episode of the Authentic Persuasion Show.